Blog Talk Radio.
Guest with us today, and we have some riveting sports information we're going to talk about today. Yes, I'm dropping that ASU education using the word riveting. Hopefully there's not too many U of A folks out there. I'm sure they wouldn't understand that, but I digress. I won't get into that. We are brought to you as usual by Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco, located on Alma School in Chandler Heights. Let them know the PLR sent you from the Cave Show. They will take 10% off of any of your cigar purchases. Again, that's the finest cigar spot there is, Maduro's Fine Cigar and Tobacco. You can purchase your cigars there and leave, or you can stay, smoke there. They have a special lounge in the back that has 5 televisions. Another area where it has another 5 or 6 televisions, and make sure you inquire about getting a locker. It backs up to a humidor, so you can leave everything there and come and leave that as your getaway spot. Like I said, we have a very special guest with us today. Listen, it takes a lot to play in the NFL, and it takes a lot to play Major League Baseball, and this gentleman did both. Proud to call him my brother, the one and only Ed Smith. Ed, what's up, my man?
Brother Paul, how you doing, man? Good to be with you.
Man, everything is good. Just all this craziness in sports going on.
Yeah, man, it's like the floodgates just opened up and everything just kind of hit all at once, you know? Hey, before we forget, too, man, I wanted to send an RIP out to Cortez Kennedy, man. I was sad to see he left us today.
Yeah, right before we came on, I just saw that. 48 years old, I don't like people dying at 48.
Nah, man, I'll be there in a couple weeks myself, and, you know, he's one of those brothers that I played against, you know, so it, you know, really, he's great talent, obviously Hall of Famer and everything. Is just, when those type of guys are leaving us, like at this age, man, it brings our own mortality to the forefront, so you just want to, you know, wish his family and everybody, you know, he's close to condolences. That's sad.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely in the prayers, and then prayers out to Manchester as cowards showed up once again and took the life of innocent people just trying to enjoy concerts, and especially those who had their lives extinguished before they can even really get it started, kids. And it just goes to show how precious every day is, and how these cowards are out here that will do whatever they have to prove a point, which takes lives of innocent people that have nothing to do with anything.
Absolutely. So, crazy time we live in. It's, you know, all the reality hits us when stuff like this happens. So, yeah, thoughts and prayers to all those people as well.
So, hey, let me ask you this. I know we have a lot of basketball, but I want to start with football. Football has decided to loosen its rules and allow some celebrations to happen. Now, naturally, now I'm hearing coaches, high school coaches, Pop Warner coach is already in the uproar saying, you know, if they go back to celebrations, what are we going to do with our kids? I thought football was a disciplined sport. And if as a high school coach, you can't stop your kids from celebrating, is it just me, or is that's not an NFL problem, is it?
No, absolutely. You know, now here's the thing. It is kind of, it's a double-edged sword because, you know, obviously these kids are looking at the athletes at the highest level as quote-unquote role models, and they want to emulate them and things like that. But at the same time, like you said, this is, you know, this is a game of discipline, and these coaches should have a better, you know, more control of their kids to, you know, keep them away from doing some of the things, obviously, actually, they want to do, and some of the things they see on television, but you got to have more authority and kind of guide them. And also it's teaching lessons too. This is an opportunity to teach them, not just because you see it on TV doesn't mean you have to do it and be your own man and follow the rules. So, you know, I applaud the NFL for opening things back up, but there's probably a hidden agenda behind it because we know how Goodell kind of runs the show. Something is going to come behind this to cloud it all, but I'm glad they opened up some of the rules and they're not going to be as, picky on the celebration.
Yeah, and you know what? Some of them were just fun. I mean, some were just stupid penalties. Dunking a ball, that was considered using a prop. Hopping in a salvation bucket, that was a prop. I mean, that's going ridiculous. Now, we know there were times when people take Sharpies. I think my favorite prop ever was Joe Horn taking that cell phone out and calling in that touchdown. So I know that it can go far, but at the same time, it's not delaying the game. It's not hurting anyone. If it's going to be something that they look at after the fact and say, okay, you went too far, here's a little fine. But I think it's just a double edge. I mean, look, when you played ball in high school, and I played ball, if our coach said stop, we stop. Now, Nick Saban doesn't have a problem with getting people to do what he wants them to do. So,
So
how does a high school coach look at a 15-year-old and say, I'm going to have a hard time keeping them disciplined? It's like when parents say, well, if they do that, it makes me hard. How do I explain this to my kids? Well, you're their parent.
Well, PLR, you know, back in the day, man, if you disobeyed orders at that level, what'd you do, man? It was start running. I'll tell you when to stop. You know,
exactly.
Those are that's the type of stuff that, you know, that builds character too. You know, obviously, you know, you do wrong, you got to pay the penance. That's not that big a deal. You know, I totally disagree with anybody talking about how this is going to, you know, corrupt the minds of these youngsters. It's not that big a deal, if you ask me. You know, and then certain thing, and here's something someone brought up I think is very interesting. They're talking about, well, we don't want players out there gyrating and doing this and doing that. PLR, what do you think the cheerleaders are doing for 3.5 hours on Sunday?
Exactly. That's a great point.
They're out there shaking their booties in the smallest of little outfits and stuff like that, and then you want to get on somebody for, you know, doing a couple, as they call them, inappropriate thrusts. You know, it's kind of very hypocritical.
Well, speaking of hypocritical, the NFL had another rule. For player safety, we're going to cut overtime to 10 minutes. That helped the safety. That is crock of a bunch of crock. You know that. What is 5 minutes going to do?
I was going to say, if you took that 5 minutes and run it in real time, how many plays is that actually going to eliminate from the game, PLR, in a quarter? I mean, basically that's maybe a one possession from one of the teams. So instead of 40 plays in the overtime period, now it's going to be 35. And that's going to do this great thing in terms of helping us relieve, you know, some of the danger of those athletes out there for those first 3+ hours. You know, we're going to take 5 minutes off the back end, you know.
You know, at this point, honestly, I wish the NFL would just say this. It's a violent sport. You signed up for it. These are some of the things that happen. You can get concussions. You can hurt your body. And you can stand for 50, 60, 40, whatever. These are the things that can happen. If you are signing up for this, this is what the job pays. Are you ready to do this? Period. Let it go. I'd rather have that than hypocritical. This will do to make it safe. But you know what? We're going to cut overtime, but we're really still looking at those that 18-game schedule. We're going to cut this 5 minutes. But, you know, we really like the Thursday game every week, not just on special occasions like Thanksgiving. We really want safety, but either do it or don't do it. There's a ton of football players out there. If you say, look, this is what the job entails, they're not giving up their job. This is what they love to do. So stop trying to mask it. You can't make boxing safer. You can't make UFC safer. You can try with equipment to help, but it's a violent sport, and that's what sells. So I don't understand why we keep having this charade that we're going to make something safe when we know it's not.
The biggest – you hit right on the head, too. The biggest hypocritical point of the entire, you know, stance of the NFL is those Thursday night games, giving guys not enough time to recover – no time to prepare, no time for your body to heal and everything like that. And then, like you said, you want to take 5 minutes. And here's the thing, Paul, remember this. 5 minutes of overtime, which how many times does overtime actually happen in a season anyway?
Exactly.
It's not like always. I mean, you can count in during the year, maybe 5-10 games that go to overtime. And then of those five, over the last bunch of years, we've had maybe a couple ties, maybe one a year. 1 year we maybe had two. But you're talking about something so inconsequential, and you want to attack that, but yet you got the Thursday night games, and you know, like you said, all the other things you're talking about. It's not like they're trying to attack something that is like just so devastating and happens so often. Overtime rarely happens in the NFL, and when it does, sometimes it's over before you know it. So, you know, like I said, it's all smoke and mirrors with the league.
Do you think the NFL is at the point where they say, we are big, we are large, we can do whatever we want to do? And so what we'll do is we'll say this. People will talk about it, which in a way keeps our name in their mouths while there's no season going on, and they'll debate it, and then we'll change something else, and then they'll forget about that, and then they'll debate this, and then the next thing you know, everyone is in camp, and we're not even talking about player safety anymore. Do you sometimes think that's how they feel?
Absolutely. You know what it reminds me of? And we've probably seen it on the movies a bunch, and if you've been to New York or Chicago, what was it called, the three-card Monty or whatever they do?
Oh, yeah.
Where they put the – That's exactly what they're doing, dog. They're trying to divert your eyes, fool you, make you try to track that card, and before you know it, you're pointing to the one on the right, throwing your money down that, and all the whole time is on the left. That's all they're trying to do is, you know, just keep us fooled, and you know, the general public, I guess I should say, because people like you, myself, you know, we know the deal, so we don't fall into it. But you know, average person out there following the league, they, you know, very, they'll trust anything the league says, like, oh, we take care of our players, and that's our number one concern. And then what you hear from the fans is, I don't know why those guys are whining so much. They've got this, they got, you know, so that's the game they play to try to, you know, create this image of all the league stands for and what it's trying to do. But it's, like I said, the whole time, they got people in these meetings, and whether it's the owners at their meetings or the executive meetings and stuff like that, it's a conspiracy every time they walk into the room because they're trying to figure out how they can promote this league without, you know, taking hits because of the concussions or this or that. That's all it is. It's all propaganda.
And covering their butt as much as possible, because if they don't show that they're trying to be safe, lawsuits would be outlandish. So it's like you said,
absolutely.
I like that three card Monty. I almost forgot about that. You know, I lost about $15 on that one. I thought for sure I could figure it out. $15 downtown Chicago one time. I was like, man,
we don't see it. Like you get out there at the you know, if you're going through New York, the subway stations and stuff like that, it's still live and kicking, man.
Man, I hope I do find that sucker that got my $15 one day in Chicago. we might have to have a talk. I was about 17 years old too. I still remember to this day.
Go back and lay $15.
What'd you say?
Do you know what you could have done with that $15?
A whole lot back in the late 80s.
That's what I'm saying. That was two movies and two popcorns and some juju beans or whatever you wanted. Hey, that was big time back then.
For $15, I once took a date to a movie and to White Castle.
Oh, there you go.
I was big balling in. Shoot, you couldn't tell me nothing. I even said when we got to White Castle, whatever, you know, do your thing. Whatever you want on this menu,
you
go for it. Yeah, they were only 15 cents then. Sure, you go all out. Do your thing, girl.
There you go.
Happy days.
Yes, indeed. That $15 don't stretch as long as it did back in the day.
Hey, that $15 will just get you in the movies now.
So that's one ticket. Yeah, you
yes.
Better go to the ATM if you only got $15. She's paying for herself.
We went to see Diary of a Wimpy Kid on Sunday. And I ran once we got in. The wife paid for the tickets. Once we got in, she went to concessions with the boys. I ran to the restroom. I got out. She had bought ices, popcorn, pizza, whatever. And when I got the ice, I said, I told you I was okay with it. And all you wanted. I looked up. It was $6. I said, this better be. I drank every bit of that icy that I could get. I thought my mother's cup was going to Because I was like, for $6, there's nothing left in this cup.
Ain't even nothing behind.
I was this close to taking a straw and rinsing it out and taking it home.
I wouldn't have been mad at you either.
All right, so I want to talk about these celebrations a little bit more, but I want to switch sports. I want to talk about baseball because maybe I'm not a fan. So you tell me, but I'm not a fan of the unwritten rules because to me there's too many. I don't know all the unwritten rules, but I do know if you're going to throw at someone, you should have one shot. So when all that happened with Machado and the Orioles about 3 weeks, a month ago, when he had the hard slide on Pedroza, and they threw at him and missed, and they threw at him again and went behind him, and they threw at him again and hit him. Then the next game came up, and then he just murdered a home run, and so they threw at him again. How many times do you get to throw at someone with these unwritten rules before they charge them out and knock you out?
Well, see, that's the tricky part about baseball, because there are so many rules, and I could run down 1,000 of them to you. I played 9 years. And, you know, just some of them are so silly, but some of them have some merit behind them. You know, you don't want to show anybody up. You know, you don't want to those hard slides and stuff like that. Sometimes the rules are meant just to send a message. What happens, though, is when there's bitterness between the teams, it tends to get ugly. And then it's almost like until we get retribution, this is not over. Because I've seen instances where, you know, a guy does something and he'll come in the dugout, dude will hit a ball, pimp around the base, and we're like, dude, if somebody else doesn't pay for that, you know you're going to pay for that one, right? And he understands, so we all know what he did. He has to pay his price. He goes up the next time around. He takes it like a man. You know, what you request is nothing above the neck. You know, if you keep it down the back, hit him in the meat of the butt, whatever, that's all good. What happens is, you know, in instances where there's beef between the teams, it becomes like a feud. It becomes nasty. And you've seen them, Paul, where they last not just from series to series within a season. They can last, like if it ends too late in the year, this dude is marked for next year. You know, we're going to get him. I don't care when it is in the season. So these things can carry over. Now, where I have a problem is it does become childish, because then what happens, it becomes a lot of back and forth. You know, now they've thrown at him and they didn't get him, so it should be over. But then they try again, and then he goes and hits a home run and takes 30 seconds to go around the bases. Now they're tipped off about something else, and it's just back, and now we're going to throw at one of your guys. And so it's just something that just, you know, it festers. So, you know, being a former player, I can understand some things have to be, you know, paid for, and the cost is what it is. But at the same time, there has to be an end to it, because eventually somebody's going to get hurt.
Here's what I don't understand. When an outfielder makes a ridiculous catch, they celebrate, no one says anything. If a catcher throws a second, nails someone, he can pump his fist a little bit, not obviously do cartwheels, all that stuff. We watch my man, I can't think of his name, but he's a second baseman, Javi Baez, tag people without looking at them. To me, that's showing off. When you apply a tag on a stolen base and you don't even look at the guy, then you swipe through and just kind of flick the ball, that's your way of having some style or some flash to the game. Pitchers, they can celebrate all they want. But if a batter hits a home run and flips the bat or takes a while to go around the bases, that's playing the game the wrong way. Why? At the World Baseball Classic, we watch every country have fun except ours. Why do we say, hit a home run, put your head down, and go around the bases? Why do we say that? Other countries seem to have fun, but it's only on batters. You've got nobody in the field. Why do batters compare the ability?
Well, you just hit it right on the head right there. I played over in the Dominican Republic, you know, winter ball and other, I know guys who played over in Venezuela, Japan. The game is totally different. Have you ever seen the highlights of some of those Japanese games? The guys get up there and twirl the bats, and they have these incredible bat flips when they hit home runs and stuff like that. And it's all part of the game. Over here, we've developed this stuffy shirt, you know, mentality where, you know, I equate it to this. Golf is one of the stuffiest, most boring sports in the world, and they've lived by these rules and these credences for, I guess, as long as golf has been played, and there's never been any change to the game. And the same thing goes for baseball. where these rules developed and why, over here at least, why it is what it is. I'll never be able to tell you what the rationale behind it is. But for whatever reason, they've refused to change. The game is, quote-unquote, supposed to be played this way, and anything else is disrespectful. But meanwhile, the rest of the world, like I said, you go to their games and you look at Japan, and I mean, it's like a party when you go over there to play. You know, they're having a good time, including the players on the field, people in the stands. You go to the average baseball game here, and it's like you're sitting in church almost. Everybody's just sitting there. Occasionally something will happen, everybody will clap, and then they sit right back on their hands. So it's just I just equate it as it's an American style of baseball, and why we get to dictate, meaning you have the Latin players come over here, they play the way they do in their home country, and then they come here and they're penalized for it, because if you notice, a lot of the Latin guys are the ones that are, you know, always accused of being the ones that don't follow, quote-unquote, the rules. But like I said, for whatever reason, I guess because we're playing the game over here in our country, we get to dictate, which I've always thought was unfair and very boring.
You want to attract young viewers. Young viewers aren't the young viewers that there were in the 60s and 70s. And like I said, what cracks me up is Ozzie Smith used to come onto the field and do a backflip. Everyone cheered that because he was on defense. If he had done a backflip while batting, then everyone would hate it because he's playing it the wrong way. And when you look at some of the I don't get that. So the one guy who has a chance to do something, he's the one that's playing it the wrong way. I mean, I think it's crazy. When Bautista flipped the bat in that playoff game a year and a half ago, the fans were already – they had already erupted. But when he threw that bat, I think not only did they erupt more, but there were people in the stands that really lost their mind. So – I don't get it. Now, here's what got me asking. I was on Instagram, and I was looking at a post from – it was either Bleacher Report or this other site. I forget. And it was a high school kid who hit a home run. And I mean, he crushed a home run. And he held the bat high in the air with his, you know, with his release hand. And then when he got about maybe 10 feet, he threw it. He threw it in play, though, like between the pitcher's mound and third base. And then he took his time rounding the plate. And the umpire, you could tell the home plate umpire, was mad. But he couldn't do anything because that's not against the rules. So he finally comes around the bases, and teammates come out, congratulate him, whatever. People were putting posts. Now, mind you, this was a high school game. Next time he comes up, he should take one to the head. Hit him with the next pitch. Punish the next batter and let him feel the pain for what his teammate did. What a loser. This kid is a douche. This is a high school kid, and you have adults saying he'll be hit in the head with the baseball the next time he comes up. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard about. You have to be a complete loser to say that. And then for other people to say similar things, this is a high school kid. Maybe you should say something like, teach him that's not a cool thing to do. Beating him in the head, as long as you're saying this, we're still going to be these stuffy people when it's a high school kid.
Yeah, that's just irresponsible to even say something like that. The one thing I would say is, you know, that would be a great teaching moment for his coach, you know, to come and say, hey, next time maybe just be a little more respectful. But, you know, like I said, to talk about hitting this kid in the head and he's this and he's that is just totally irresponsible. In my entire career, I'm talking about from the time I was a little kid all the way through my professional days, I don't ever remember doing anything like that, but at the same time, I've seen it 1,000 times, and I've never thought anything was wrong with it. My theory is if you're a pitcher and you don't want a guy to show you up, then don't serve up that gopher ball. You know, it's part of the game. You know, one of the best parts about playing baseball for me was that home run try. I used to love that, man. I never pimped them and tossed bats, but, I mean, I had that little lean going around the bases, and I was tempted a couple times to, you know, maybe give a little extra, but yeah, I was good for, you know, make sure everybody knew it was my moment. But yeah, to talk about hitting a kid like that is totally irresponsible, and those people should be they need some type of, you're not supposed to be talking about hitting kids in the head.
I tell you right now, that's a good thing I wasn't good at baseball, because I would have taken 3 minutes around the bases. I would have walked. Let me catch another shot. I would walk around and stare the whole time around. like I said, we want younger people to play baseball. And you know what's funny? When you look at the inner city and you look at the population of baseball, why would a kid really want to go play in a league that doesn't want to have fun, that he can't go? It's not like football or basketball where you go to high school for basketball. You know if you're really good and you know it, you know you only got to do 1 year of college and you're going to the pros and you're going to make money right away. If you're in football after 3 years of college, which is not a bad thing, you may be going to make money right away. But if you're good at baseball, you have to go to the minor leagues first. You're not getting big money right out the way. And poor kids now, they don't want to wait for a payday. They want an instant payday. So what you're saying is, okay, we want you to play this game that you really can't have fun. When you watch it on TV, those people really aren't having as much fun. And then when you come out and you go pro, there's a process that you have to go through to get to the big leagues before you can actually really make money. And then you have to go through a period of 3, 4, 5 years. Then that's when you'll get your arbitration. Then you can really make money. So it's only going to take you about 6, 7 years to really get into good money. Explain it to what kids are going to say, oh, yeah, I really want to play.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what's happened to the game of baseball. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, and I tell people, baseball was my first love, Paul. I love baseball so much. That's why I chose to go that route. And then you do, like I said, you get into the system and you find out how political the game is and everything else. And, you know, you're watching other people in other sports do their thing, have more fun, more quicker success. It is very hard to get some of these kids to even contemplate baseball these days, just because the game, and here's the other thing too, the game itself has become so slow and monotonous, and people are always talking about, well, how do we speed the game? How do we do this? In my opinion, the game has slowed down so much because it's all about strikeouts and home runs. If you're not, you know, if you're not putting the ball in play and all it is a pitcher and catcher playing catch and striking people out with the occasional long ball, and, you know, nobody's out there stealing any bases or doing anything these days, you know, the game is just so slow and monotonous, and yeah, that's even another knock against it. How do you get kids to go out there, stand out in the field where nothing's happening, and, you know, when you compare that to basketball and football, when there's, like, nonstop action, and, you know, and a part of the problem with that as well, you brought it up a minute ago, is this today's society, especially the young kids, is all about, they got that microwave mentality. They want it right now. They want action. They got all these, you know, the stuff with the internet and everything's right this second, gimme, 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 and they don't want to wait around for anything. The game of baseball has become like a, the first Atari compared to these, you know, Sega, you know, the PlayStations and stuff now. It's like old, too old, you know, it's just the time has passed it by, and they've done nothing to upgrade it and bring it to this new generation.
You couldn't be more right. Here's the funniest thing before we move on. They instituted the no intentional walk where you just give the signal and they send the guy to first to help speed up the game. Games are 5 minutes longer this year.
Yeah.
Up to this point, on average, games are 5 minutes longer. It hasn't changed a thing. It actually made it go even slower.
Well, that's another thing, too, Paul. How many times, honestly, in a game do you have free passes? It only happens every now and then. You're talking about something that happens maybe once in a game, but for the most part, not that often. So it's like one of those things that you don't even see. And speaking of, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at your bat flip, the one you were just talking about, the kid who flipped the bat into the field.
Yeah.
That's kind of that's a little impressive right there. Hey, if he's on my team, I'm giving him some serious dap when he's coming in the club, in the dugout. If I'm on the other team, I might be coming from center. Now, if I'm third base, and I'm waiting for him to come around third base, we got to have a little, quick little chat while, before he gets around to my third base. So I can see where they might have a problem with that one.
And the other team, but to say to hit the kid in the head, adults have to be more responsible and have more self-control before you.
Yeah.
Type something like that. That's just bad. I mean, because he flipped the hell out of it. The best one ever, and I don't remember what it was, a little kid, and they're throwing a ball to him. He's batting with a plastic bat. He hits the hell out of the ball. He takes the bat, and he holds it in his hand like it's a pool cue, and he punches the bat like he hit the ball, and then he flips the bat.
I've seen that one.
That is hilarious. And his parents are laughing. You know what happens when he does that when he's nine? He's on Instagram with a bunch of grown folks saying, hit him in the head. So
yeah. That was an impressive toss, though.
It was. He wasn't playing. He wasn't playing. On the Kerry Lackey Law line with us, my man here, my brother, Ed Smith. All right, Ed, let's get this basketball out the way. I called it a sweep. And LeBron threw a sweep on me, which is going to make that a 5-game sweep instead of a 3-game sweep, like I said. But the Warriors did not. And I think I sent you and our other brother, Ed Cole, a text last night. Kevin Durant, to me, and this is not taken away from the greatness of LeBron, but to me, he's the hardest person in the league to defend. He's seven foot tall. He dribbles like a guard, and his shot is just so pure. How do you guard him, Ed?
Well, here's the thing. To be that tall, he is so fluid. You look at him, and you forget he's actually 7 feet tall. He looks like he's a 6'6", 6'7", you know, small forward out there. But then you throw in the fact that he's 7 foot with long arms, who's going to block his shot? You put somebody quicker on him to try to stay with him, he shoots over the top of him. You put somebody slower, more methodical on him, he just goes around him, and he can jump over anybody. That's about as scary a combination as you can imagine. I watched him, once he gets into the lane, it's like, is he going to dunk or is he going to pull up and, you know, hit that little soft floater or whatever. He's got so much in his arsenal, and so, like I said, so fluid with the ball. That would be that one dude that, like you said, not taking anything away from LeBron. I mean, I would not want any part of Durant even more than I would with LeBron.
I agree, because he can shoot so well. With LeBron, LeBron bully balls you. You don't have a choice. He's so physically strong. But with Kevin Durant, you don't know what to take away. You hear people say about LeBron, make him shoot jumpers. If he's hitting his jumper and we lose, then we lose. But that says there's a little weakness that we can exploit. You can't do that with KD. You can't say, well, we'll just let him shoot. Okay, well, we'll just let him drive. Or, okay, well, we'll just let him pass. Because on that team, unlike Oklahoma City, you can't just let him pass because he's passing to another all-star. So he's the difference between him here and here, him and Oklahoma City, I think even though they'll never say it, and I think him and Westbrook had a lot of respect for each other, but at the end of the game, I think there still was an internal strife of who should do what. So should I take this shot or should I let Russ take the shot? Russ, should I take this shot or give it to KD? Well, you know what? I'll just take the shot. I think in Golden State, because he went to another two-time MVP, a definite shooter in Klay Thompson, and someone who plays total team ball in Draymond Green, I really believe there – it's not, if I don't take this shot, I don't only have to worry about this guy taking a shot. There's two or three other people that can make this happen equally as well as I can. And that, excuse me, that made him relax even more and realize all the stuff that he can do and an offense that's free-flowing that allows him to do. I honestly think he's a better player, and I really think he's going to be the MVP of the finals. I really do. That's my pick going into it.
I do, too. And the one thing I thought, and you can let me know what you thought on this, was I was a little concerned when they all came together in the beginning of the year, who was going to be the alpha on that team. And silently, he has become the alpha, because you could even tell when he was out with that injury for a little while, they obviously were a different team, but even the experts, they were talking about how much he was missed, and he was the one that everything ran through. I was a little worried because, you know, with Steph being – there previously and, you know, having been the MVP and stuff like that, I thought Steph would kind of still want the lion's share of everything. But, you know, I give it to the credit of that coaching staff. They put everybody in their places and basically gave them the freedom to run how they run. But, you know, it says a lot that Kevin Durant is kind of like the big dog in that clubhouse and on that court. And, like, he definitely fits a part in going backwards. That's primarily the reason he wanted out of OKC, because with Westbrook, even though he was considered A1 or 1A, Westbrook was 1B, but Westbrook dominated a lot. You give him the ball and he would never see it a lot of times. So now he's in a place where everything's running through him, and I'll be real interested to see what Cleveland can do. Obviously, we're all anticipating Cleveland getting past the Celtics, but I'll be real interested to see how this matchup. You know, we've been waiting for it for over a year now to see what happens.
LeBron doesn't complain about Draymond last year. He doesn't get suspended. Cleveland loses that series. Once Draymond got suspended, that killed that series. So this year, the difference I don't just watch the game. I pause it, rewind, look at this, look at that. My wife told me she didn't know I was coaching in the playoffs this year because I kept freezing the game. And Ed, this year I have a little minion. Paul Jr. sat there with me, and we actually rewound two Golden State plays, fast break, to talk about how you fill the lane running. And he said, he looked at me and said, "Okay, Dad, I got it now." So I've actually am raising a mini me when it comes to watching hoops. But the one thing that I noticed a lot about Golden State, when they get the ball off the rim and they're starting to push, all the team members, with the exception of one trailer to defend the other rim, they run. And when they all run, you have four guys running. You don't know who to defend. But on top of that, that's an unselfish team, because if you run with three other guys, there's a good chance you won't see the ball, and so you just ran for no reason. A lot of teams don't do that. Once two guys start running, that third guy doesn't run because he knows he's probably not going to get the ball. But they're unselfish enough to do that, to put pressure on you so much that they know a teammate is going to get rewarded off them just running the floor. And so I've never seen in the last, I want to say 15 years, probably since the Lakers' last three-peat, not the one with Kobe 1-2, but the last three-peat, where a team can play so many different styles of basketball and still be one of the top two defensive teams in the league. And that L.A. team wasn't even a great defensive team until the playoffs rolled around. But they play good defense, which translates into that good offense. And what you said, when Kevin Durant went out, it's amazing. They struggled for like two or three games, and then it's almost like they said, "He wasn't here last year. We'll just play the style we played before he got here." And then they still won 67 games.
Yeah.
They just turned the style.
So you stole my thunder there too, because you hit exactly what I was going to say. Most of the time you look at a team like them, they're identified obviously by their offense. With Durant on the backside at 7 foot, that long wingspan, which we just saw last night against the Spurs, he effortlessly not only blocks shots, but he alters so many of the shots out there. And to have him and Draymond on that backside, because you got to remember, they're trying to make up for having Curry on the court, because if not for great back end help, people would be abusing Curry because, one, he's not the biggest guy. And he doesn't strike me as somebody who, he's not going to be the dude out there slapping the floor like, "Let's play some defense," you know.
Right.
But with everything they have on the backside, Iguodala back there, they rotate. And I'm sure you've done this. You probably froze it and go back. They rotate and they get guys in the right spot. And they got the help where it needs to be. And if all else fails, you got Durant back there, either altering the shot or putting them up against the glass. So, and what does that do? That starts their break. That starts their run. So, they're going to be tough to beat. We'll see if Cleveland can handle them. But I see a. Could you? Has anybody? Nobody's ever gone four sweeps, have they? No.
Uh-huh. No. Cleveland will get one. Here's the thing that worries me about Cleveland, and that we're talking about Boston like they're dead already. But here's what worries me about Cleveland. Offensively, when things aren't going their way, they go into iso ball. And if you play iso ball against the Warriors, they'll kill you. You have to have
absolutely
a moving to make them move. You cannot isolate one-on-one against them for stretches, because they will not allow you to score. And that's what had us. I mean, obviously San Antonio was playing without stars, but there were times where the ball wasn't moving, and when a ball wasn't moving, Golden State will kill you. Because then there's nothing you can do against them. I mean, all we have to say about this team is, and I'm not saying he's not a talented player, because he is. He just never put it all together completely. They make JaVale McGee look good. on a consistent basis. It's almost like they put their arm around him, and they what they say to you, what I love about this team is they say, we don't care what your weaknesses are. We're going to find what you do well, and we're going to put you in that position to do everything you do well. And if you have a mental lapse, one of us will get you. Don't worry about it. We got your back on that one. Just keep doing what you do well. What does he do? He's 7'2". He throw the ball 12 feet in the air. He goes and gets it. And what do? They throw the ball in the air 12 feet, and he goes and gets it. They do everything to make their teammates look good. And just think, how many people said, wow, to get Durant, look, they let go. They let go of Ryan Clark's lookalike. I have to say that all the time. They let go of him. They let go of both. They let go of this guy. Oh, man, they're going to be – they let go of Barbosa left. They're going to be in trouble. All they really kept was was Iggy off the bench and Livingston off the bench. Their bench is depleted. They got these young two kids, McClaw coming in and playing, and he's playing well. He found JaVale McGee that they laughed at. He's playing well. And where are these other guys? Two of them are out of the playoffs, and Bogut played 28 seconds and got hurt. So,
yeah.
I got
a quick question for you. What does this say about Steve Kerr as a coach? Obviously, they're continuing to roll with him not being there. Does it say that he put such a great system together that anybody could run it as long as they stay within the confines, or the team is pretty much self-sufficient? One of us could probably coach that team to victory.
I think the first. But here's what Steve Kerr did. When he came in for Mark Jackson, he didn't say, we're going to forget everything Mark Jackson did, and we're going to start all over. He took every part of this that was great, and then we're going to build on that. And then we're going to take you to the next level. See, I think Mark Jackson had him going in the right direction. But on the mental side and on that political side, they needed Steve Kerr. Because Steve Kerr, unlike Mark Jackson, that could say, and I've always liked this when people say, I can't believe they fired him. Yeah, I can, because Steve Kerr can pull you aside and say, hey, Steph, you know, I remember when Mike was going through the pressure of these championships, and this is what I saw him do. Hey, KD, I know you never won a ring, man. I remember how frustrated it was for Duncan to wait in between those two rings, do it. He could say things to you that would register to you because he had won with Michael, and then he went and won with Duncan. He played for Phil. He played for Pop. He had all. Then he came out here, and he got all that money off the books for the Suns and started to get them going in a good direction as their GM. There's not a phase that he didn't do well in. So now when he's talking to you, you're looking at him saying, wow. So, yeah, I think it's his system, and I think it's in place where when he comes into the locker room at a halftime, remember one of the series before, he was in the locker room at halftime drawing up the X's and O's for him and saying, hey, this is what you need to look at. This is what you need to do. Does he need to be out there every second? No. But this I always say make no mistakes about it. This is still Steve Kerr's team. He still has his hands all over everything when it comes to this team. So I think a lot of credit has to go to Steve Kerr, and then a lot of credit have to go to the players to remember. Because, you know, players are like kids. When the parents leave, they show out. If you've been an isolation player and you want to isolate and coach pull you off, put you on the bench if you isolate, and then coach ain't there, you go and you isolate. But they have too much respect for not only their coach but for their teammates to get into meatball even when he's not there. It's the players. This is just a perfect storm. And, again, if Cleveland has to beat them this year for me to believe last year was not an anomaly with Draymond being suspended.
Okay, I got one more for you. Where do you fall? And I know where I fall on this. Where do you fall on this stance that if LeBron gets this one or whatever, he is now on the same pedestal with Michael Jordan?
The only way LeBron James is on the same pedestal with Michael Jordan is they're standing on the same stair, going up a floor.
I'm right there with you.
Michael Jordan is the greatest basketball player that I have ever seen play in my life. Now, I've not seen Wilt. I've not seen Bill Russell. I've not seen any of those guys. Michael Jordan won championships with that team in an era where there was still very talented big men in the league. And as a two guard, he went to six finals, won all six finals. And people talk about the competition in the league. Michael played in a league that was one of the most competitive eras to play in. It's not like he walked through weak teams with all these extra added teams and the free flowing of the game where you can't touch anybody. And I'm not saying players are soft, so I hope it doesn't come out like that. But it's a much more no touch friendly league. He went through teams where he's getting, there's a book called The Jordan Rules because they tried to kill him and no one was ever kicked out of a game for doing it. If you did have that stuff right now, I mean, look, LeBron got mad because Draymond called him the B word, and then that's what set him off, and he had someone suspended. Do you honestly think back in the 90s, someone would have been suspended for pushing another man's nuts off his neck? That just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have happened. So we're talking about a guy who went through, and I one day I looked at this, and I said, well, he went through Magic, that's a Hall of Famer, and Byron Scott, who's a very, you know, Hall of Fame of really good, but not the real Hall of Fame. Then he went through Portland. Let's see, Clyde Drexler, Hall of Famer. Then he went through Phoenix. You got Bart, a team that was stacked. That was almost the Golden State of today before all this stuff happened with the 3-point shooters. That team was stacked, won over 60 some games. Then he takes 2 years off, comes back, and then he goes through Stockton and Malone twice. Goes through Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. And all along the way, in the middle of those first three, he's beaten Ewing. He's beaten Miller. He's beaten one Hall of Famer in series, one after the next. And he didn't rest a game. In fact, he'd kick you out of the locker room, out of the training room, if you were in there. So no one can tell me on this earth that anyone is better than that person who I saw Detroit try to put in the hospital for 3 years in a row and came back stronger until he finally swept them. I can never be convinced of that. I think people are looking at how.
All I can say is preach.
It's not possible. I know LeBron James is the best in the game today. He's not Michael. He's just not Michael. Look, I'll flip this over to football. I think Tom Brady is absolutely an incredible quarterback. He might be one of the top three quarterbacks to ever play. I saw Joe Montana get knocked out of Giant Stadium and land in Manhattan with the hit one time in the playoffs. They tried to kill the man. And then he got back up next season, came back and won a Super Bowl. Joe Montana played in an era where you could kill quarterbacks. It was a badge of honor. I don't know if you saw the 30 for 30 on the Bears. Their defense wanted to – they took three Detroit Lions quarterbacks out in one game as a badge of honor. You can't touch a quarterback now. You can't touch a wide receiver. These wide receivers, and I'm not saying it, but a lot of them, they would have – do you remember in that Super Bowl, Denver versus Seattle, and Cam hit my man from Denver coming across the middle in like the second play of the game, just laid him out. And he did not come across the middle again the entire Super Bowl. He had alligator arms. That's one player. The Bears defense did that to everyone. Oakland Raiders defense did that to everyone. Wide receivers couldn't play. A lot of these wide receivers could not play then. So the game was friendlier to talented players. That doesn't mean they're not talented, but the rules are friendlier. So I'm not saying LeBron couldn't have played then. All I'm saying is I don't think anyone will ever be able to duplicate in a big man's league what a two-guard did for that stretch of career to become who he did, and then for someone else to come up and people say, well, I think he's better. I think that's a dumb conversation, and I think that when talk shows talk about that every day, they have no other topics to talk about because it's clearly not going to happen.
Yeah, they can talk to the blue in the face. I'm right there with you. I've seen the man up close and in person and watched him play for all those years, just like you did, and there's no way that you imagine him in this day and era playing this type of soft basketball where you can't hand check anybody. Everything other than a slap on the wrist is considered a flagrant one or flagrant two. Imagine how he'd have ran through this league roughshod. They wouldn't have been able to contain him regardless. And I know they talk about LeBron's size and strength all the time, but you also have to look into the aspect of the heart. And I'll tell anybody, nobody had bigger heart than Jordan.
Let's be honest about something. Like I said, I don't think we're taking anything away from LeBron. But how many times has LeBron been really hit? How many times has he really got drilled that you can even remember?
When you touch, I mean, as big a man as he is, whenever he gets even remotely touched, you would swear somebody shot him or something. Like, he's just, like, so shocked that somebody would actually come at him or hit. I'm like, do you know what Lambeer and the Pistons used to do to Jordan just to get down the lane to the hole? I mean, that you could call some of those hits back in the day. You could actually brought police in and accuse, you know, you could have charged somebody with a assault and battery back then compared to what they do now. It's ridiculous.
Could you imagine those Knicks teams that were coached by Riley, what Oakley Mason would have done to LeBron coming through the middle?
Oh, my God. That would have been just scary.
So, look, Oakley and Mason aren't little boys. Oakley's still slapping everybody just because. He just slaps people. He's over 50 years old, still slapping people. But it would have been a different game. So, and I hate to compare eras, but when everyone says LeBron is chasing the ghost of Michael, I think it's time for LeBron just to be LeBron. To be perfectly, I think you almost have to. You know who did this? The first of his career, Kobe Bryant, seemed like a lot of times he was trying to steal Michael's moves and shots because he was. But when the Shaq era left L.A., Kobe became Kobe. At a certain point in his career, he just became who he was. He stopped trying to be politically correct with everything, and he just said whatever. And when he started doing that, people started looking at him for him being who he was at that point. And I think that's the difference. Everyone keeps comparing LeBron to Michael so much that you can't even think about all the good stuff LeBron does, because every time you say, wow, he's the best player, well, he's going to be better than Michael. No, he's not. And maybe we should start saying this. He has 3 rings. Kobe has 5. Magic has 5.
Yeah.
Maybe we have to catch them before he gets to Michael.
What do you think happens if he goes ahead and they lose this series? And what is his record in the finals? He's like 3-5 or something like that. 3-4.
He would be 3-5. This will be his 8th one. And I don't kill him for that. The logo of the NBA is 1-9 in the finals. Magic is 5-4.
Yeah.
Kobe is 5-2, so you can lose in the final. I mean, that's not it. But when we talk Magic and Michael and early Kobe, they were still playing in a league where people hit the snot out of you. And I think that's why you have to temper that just a little bit. And when you go through the 80s, that may be the era where the best ball players played as groups. So these teams had to fight through, to me, a little bit more to get to the finals. I mean, when you stop and think about it, Dr. J won one title, and that team, he didn't win the finals one year with Barkley, Moses Malone, Mo Cheeks, him, and Andrew Toney when he could play. That team didn't even get to the finals.
Yeah.
So those teams then, they were stacked. And real quick, because I know we're running out of time, the term that I hate the most nowadays, and I want to ask you about this really quick, super team. Isn't it funny how fans get pissed off when players decide their fate, but when management in the 80s were trading and doing their moves and doing whatever, it's okay if the management decides where you were. Because there were super teams.
Well, you know they equate it to the inmates running the asylum. That's what they kind of feel like, you know, that's just unfair. And reality, heck, you know, that's what it's supposed to be. It's a free work state, atmosphere we have, and those players, you know, I don't blame them for wanting to be on good teams. It's like going to the gym, like you and me, we were still able to play basketball. I ain't played in a while with these bad knees. You go to the gym, you look around, and you got guys talking about who, you know, I got next, and, you know, everybody starts forming the team. You want to be with the better dudes on the team. You don't want a bunch of scrubs out there with just getting your head knocked in. So, you know, not necessarily you want a little competition, but at the same time, hey, I want to be, you know, I want to be, we'll run together, that type of thing. So it's, you know, I don't fault these players for doing what they do.
You know, when I look back and I look in the 80s, that team I just told you about with Philly, that was a super team. Boston Celtics, all the Hall of Famers, that was a super team. The Lakers, that was a super team. The Pistons traded for a league scoring champ in Mark McGuire to add him to Isaiah, Joe Dumars, Bill Laimbeer, John Sally. That was a super team. So every time I hear, oh, they got these two super teams, that's not the fault of those two teams. That's the fault of the other 28 GMs that don't know how to attract people and put a team together the correct way. Houston is put together with smoke and mirrors.
Quickly, I'll give you one other thing, too. Back in the day, Paul, the teams, there were much more talent in the league as well because of development of players. Players played 3 or 4 years in college. Then they came out. You got your Ewings, you know, your Duncans, people like that. Even Jordan didn't come out after his junior year. You got people who stayed around in college. So that, you know, there's much more developed talent in the league. Now you're getting these guys coming in after 1 year, all of them, and it takes years for them to either develop or fall off the cliff. And, you know, and it's just done so much detriment to the league. You know, you ran off a bunch of teams, Boston, Philly, L.A., Indiana, New York. They all had veteran quality, really good guys on their team. Now, you look at one team and you see all the veteran talent. The rest of the league is a bunch of young kids trying to find their way.
Because they drafted on talent back in the day, and now they draft everything on potential.
Yep-er.
You nailed it right on the head. You nailed it right on the head. And it's a shame that that's the way the league is, but that's what it is. So Golden State didn't go out and get Kevin Durant when he was 23. They got him now when he's developed, not after 1 year. So you can't all of a sudden jump on that bandwagon and say, well, this is. No, LeBron went back to Cleveland after they could get Kevin Love, who had been in the league for 6-7 years, after Kyrie Irving had matured after 3 years. He didn't go to a team full of potential guys, you know, potential guys. He went to an established team. When he went to Miami, he didn't go down there with rookies. He went with Wade and Bosh. So it's the fault of these other teams. And like I said, I know I pick on Houston a lot, but they played with smoke and mirrors. They make you think they're better than they are, and they're not. And as opposed to putting together a team where you say, we take all good shots, like Golden State, that includes mid-rangers, we're only going to take threes and layups. That's stupid. That catches up with you. But it's amazing, and you know, I could go on about it and go and go and go. But, Ed, tell everyone about your show.
Well, we got the Easy Sports Talk Show. It airs live on 1060 NBC Sports 1060 AM every Saturday from 10 to noon. My partner, Jim Marshall, you know, we've been enjoying what we've been doing, and appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us too, Paul.
No doubt. They can get you on, is it TuneIn, the TuneIn app?
Yeah, I think was it the TuneIn app, and was it NBCSports1060.com/listen-live. It's all on the, they follow me on Twitter, Ed Smith Speaks. They can get all that info too, as well as we have the Easy Sports Talk Twitter as well, which I'm starting to use a little more.
Twitter is not your enemy, my man. It's not your enemy.
I know. I'm starting to learn that a little bit.
That's cool. So this Saturday, the holiday weekend, you lined up ready to go?
We're taking it off. Actually, there's a ASU has baseball Saturday morning, so I get a weekend off, man. I'm going to just enjoy the family and eat some barbecue.
And I hear you. Well, listen, you know I appreciate you coming on and giving all your expertise.
Anytime, Brother Paul. You know how we do it.
No doubt, Fred. You know, we got to get our guy back on, but he's out there killing it with the Redskins. We got to get him to hang. The three of us got to get together again like we did, you know, for the 5 months and a half ago.
Yeah, he'll have to let us know when he's back out here. I know he's trying to get back this way anyway, so we'll get together.
No doubt. Well, listen, I appreciate it, man. You tell the family and say hello to everyone that's good and enjoy this three-day weekend.
There you go. Appreciate you, Brother Paul.
All right, now, brother. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Got you.
That was the one only Ed Smith. Like I said, it's rare that you get someone that did it in 2 games. Pro baseball and pro football. Hey, look, this was the best hour ever. Thank you, Ed, for joining us. Thank you.
Tomorrow is.
I am a marching band. I am the people. Oh, I am a helping hand. I am a hero.